lecture titled Improving Our Individual Worth was recorded Friday, April the 4th, 1997 at the Martin Luther King Center in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. The lecturer is Imam W.D. Muhammad, Muslim American spokesman, and now Imam Muhammad.
Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you, praise you, Allah. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Praise be to God, the creator of us all. We witness that he is one who has made everything and made everything to have honor and respect. And today, our topic is individual worth, recognizing individual worth. The way I intend to go about this topic, or go about addressing or explaining to you what this topic is about, may make you think at times that I'm really not aware of my topic, but I am. And first I would like to say that we're again happy to be here in Milwaukee this beautiful spring day, and to have the special opportunity to address these youngsters, young men, young women that have been brought here, and we hope that they will appreciate, or we will have something to offer to their ears that they will appreciate. We are Muslims, but that shouldn't make any Christian feel uncomfortable, because we are Muslims who understand that God cares for all of us, not just for Muslims. God cares for all of us. And we understand that God gave his guidance, his instructions to the prophets of the New Testament, the testament of Jesus Christ, upon him be peace, the gospel of Jesus Christ, or whatever we might call that New Testament. And we know that the same God who cares for us all gave the Old Testament to the people before the Christians, the Jews, and those who were before the Christians, called Hebrews and by other names. We're here in this center, and we're reminded of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. too, of his great life and his great sacrifices he made, the great gifts he left with us to help make life better for all people. Firstly, for those who were denied their rights, but for all people. So we respect him, and on this day we pray for his soul that is in heaven. We feel sure of that. We pray for his soul. I'm aware that this God that created everything has many names. We say Allah. That's the common name with us for God. But Christians who speak Arabic, they're Arab Christians, they're Christian Arabs who speak Arabic, and they have been Christians since the time of Christianity. They were Christians before Islam came to that part of the world. Islam, or the Quran, and Muslims, that came to the world, what is called the Middle East, Arabia, and that part of the world near Africa and Africa, North Africa and those parts, about 1400 years ago and a little better. Before the birth of that new idea in the world, people were speaking Arabic in those parts, and Allah meant God for them, and Allah means God for them now. So we have people in that part of the world where Muslims are in the majority, speaking Arabic, and that's their language, that they have inherited that language from their forefathers and mothers, and they call God Allah. So we over here in America, we seem to take things and make them all over again, you know. We have a tendency to want to make things new. We want to make things in our own way, and we want to make it so we like it. So many have taken even Islam and made it so they will like it. And they have made it different, and it's not really Islam as we see Islam in the world. And they have even taken the name God, Allah, in Arabic, Allah, and they have made that name mean something different from what it really means in most of the Islamic world, which numbers people in the Islamic world are 1 billion people now, one of out of every five individuals on earth, if we could count them that way, would be a Muslim. One out of every five would be a Muslim, because there's a little over 5 billion people on earth now, and Muslims are a little over 1 billion Muslims on earth. And Muslims are not just black and not just white. Muslims are of all colors. Muslims are brown, like the Indonesians, the largest Muslim country in the world in terms of how many Muslims are there. Indonesia is brown people, and Albania and Turkey and some other countries, even Syria, are white people. And the people of Nigeria and Sudan and other places are black-skinned people. And all over, and the Chinese people are called the yellow people. There are many Muslims in China, millions of Muslims in China. So Muslims are all over. Muslims are all colors. Muslims are of the many nations and many ethnicities that we have on this planet Earth. I'm just doing this to quickly acquaint you with Muslims, because I am a Muslim and I want to feel comfortable with here with you, and I want you to feel comfortable with me. I recall working on the job as a welder. I lost my good, comfortable place with my father because I differed with him about the belief in God. He had taught me all of my life to see Allah as a man. And as I got older and studied the book of Muslims that he also had, he had it too, but he was looking at it differently. My mind got to be freer, and I started to look at it with an independent mind. So I started to see God differently. I didn't see the holy book of Muslims saying any place that God is a man, but to the contrary, it was saying God is not anything that can be killed, or that can be hurt, or that can get sick, or that can get tired. God is above all these limitations that we have as human beings. So I said, well, this man that my father told me was God, he got sick. They told me he had a cold. And they told me that he used to ask for tissues and handkerchiefs to blow his nose. I said, this man had to eat food. They told me he would say he was hungry, and they would prepare him a meal. So that couldn't be my God. That man couldn't be my God anymore. So when I told my father that, he didn't like that, and he said, this will make trouble in our community if you talk this way. Says, so if you're going to stick to that, if you're going to hold to that idea, then I have to put you out. So he put me out of the community. They call it being put out of the Nation of Islam. He put me out of the community. And he told me, he said, you know what this means? You won't be able to see your mother. He told me that, so it would be very hard on me. He thought maybe I would say, well, I changed my mind, I'll stay here. But no, God was more important to me than my own life or anything. I told him I couldn't change, so he put me out. I had no other employment. I had worked for the Muslim businesses all of my life, so I had no other employment. When I went outside looking for employment, they said, well, where were you employed before? I said, for the Muslims. Back there in those days, the Muslims weren't looked at very, 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 very friendly by the establishment. So they didn't want to hire the son of Elijah Muhammad. So I had a very hard time. So someone suggested to me, maybe you should do what your brother did, who went out and got a job on his own, change your name. So I did. I changed my name to Wallace Delaney, and I got a Social Security card in Wallace Delaney. And then I got a job. Finally, I got a good job. I went to a training school for about 6 weeks, and I trained to be a combination welder. And eventually, I got a good job. Now I'm working on this job in this factory, C&B Welders in Chicago Southside, and my supervisor He's with us. We're getting ready to start the morning. And he said, "Well, Wallace," he said, "let's get started." I said, "Okay." So we went to the work desk, work bench to start on the work. And he said, "Such is life." And expressions would really stick in my mind. I wonder why he would say, "Such is life." He said, "Such is life." So I started doing something, and he said, "You know what you're doing there, Wallace?" I said, "I think I do." So he said, "Let me tell you something, a little story." He said, "There was a fellow." Said he was supervising a bunch of guys like I'm doing. He said, "And the guys would do things in the wrong way, and they would insist that they were doing it the right way." I said, "Well, no." I said, "You're my boss. I'm not going to." He said, "No, no, let me tell you the story." He said, they would insist that they were doing it the right way. Said he would ask them, say, who told you to do it like that?" Said they would try to give some explanation. Said, and then he'd ask them another one. Say, "What you doing there?" Said, "I'm doing something. I know how to have this." Said, "Who taught you that?" So they all would have to try to think, who told them to do it that way? Who taught them that? So he said, when he finally asked all of them, he told all of them, he said, "All of you told me that somebody else told you to do that. Somebody else taught you that. So what do you know on your own?" The answer is nothing. I don't know anything on my own. W.D. Muhammad, Wallace D. Muhammad, I know nothing on my own. I came into this world knowing absolutely nothing. And everything I know came from somebody else. I may learn to reason and come up with new ideas, but if I trace it back, where it started with somebody else. And the first human being that was put on this earth knew nothing. He got all of his knowledge, called Adam, or Adam and Eve, or whatever we want to call the first people. They got all their knowledge from what God made. They knew absolutely nothing until they got knowledge from what the Creator did, from what the Creator made. Respect for the individual person. God created every individual person to be able to manage life, manage living. But the world eventually becomes man's world. And when the world becomes man's world, we have to live under rules that we decide upon together. The town people decide upon the rules that will govern their town, etc. So now we live under man's rule. We live in man's environment, and we live under man's rule. So the test for us becomes much greater. The test for us become much greater. If each one of us had been born like Adam and Eve were born, we would come into a good life. But we're not born like that. The world has changed. Man's world is here now. And man has learned something over the centuries of living and dying nations, not people, living and dying nations. Nations have lived and died. Worlds of men have lived and died. And man is finally learning something. He's learning that he can't manage all that he has thought he could manage. Our president now is calling for more help, President Bill Clinton. He's asking for more people to help him. The world leaders, not only our president, in Russia, in China, in Europe, in Africa, everywhere, leaders are beginning to realize that man took on more than he could be responsible for, and he needs more help. We hope that these leaders are beginning to believe that they need more help from their Creator, the Lord God that did all of this and made everything possible for us. We hope they are learning that lesson too, and I believe they are. But definitely they are learning that they can't be as bold in their actions as they were in generations gone by. They have to be more considerate of respect for the individual worth and for the individual intelligence, for the honor and respect that God created each human being for. God created each human being for honor and respect. Your human person is what makes you deserve that honor and that respect. It's not that you are black, that's not why you deserve that honor and respect. It's not that you are white that you deserve that honor and respect. It's that you are human that you deserve that honor and that respect. Now we know honor and respect has to be given also to achievements. So the person who has achievements, whether it's achievements of moral nature, achievements of moral character, or achievements of intelligence, academic achievements, or achievements of just success in the world, we have to give respect to that. But no respect is greater than the respect that is due the human person as a human creation, except respect for that one that made that possible, and that is the Creator. Now, my son, Sadi, we call him Sadi, his real name is Sadiruddin Muhammad, but we call him Sadi. Sadi has a mind of his own, and I do too. That's why I differ with my father, I guess. Sadi has a mind of his own, and I have learned that, so I don't waste a lot of my time and end up being frustrated and worn out by Sadi. If Sadi says something and I see he's serious, I just listen. Because I don't want to wrestle with Sadi. He wrestles with you until the sun comes up and goes down again, you know. So anyway, Sadi recently, last 3 or 4 years, he had a big change in his life. Sadi used to be very hard to even speak to say, "Good morning, Sadi." Sadi would come back and give you some words, make you wish you had just kept walking, maybe. Now, anyway, I want to share this with you because it made me feel awful good. I'm a praying man. I believe in praying to God. And Sadi knows that. That's my son. So I came to Sadi's house to bring him something. He asked me to bring him something. I brought it to him. Sadi opens the door. He's a man now. He's living on his own. He has no wife, but he got 2 children. He got a little girl and a little boy, our grandchildren. So Sadi came to the door. And this is cleanup week, so his grandchildren staying with him. They came to the door with him. So I said, "Hey, come in here, sweetie. Let me see my sweetie." So I greeted them all. And I was in a hurry. I was on a business errand. Sadi says, "Daddy, it's time to pray." See, we pray at certain times. Muslims pray at certain times. We're supposed to do that. Unless something very important interferes with that, you're supposed to pray at that time. So Sadi said, "Daddy, it's time to pray." And I want you to know that really doing this has been the help in my life. Said, "Nothing else helped me but this." So he didn't say, "Daddy, come on, come in. I was standing outside the door. I was just bringing him something. I wasn't going to go inside his apartment. He didn't say, "Daddy, come in and pray." If he had said that, I would have come in and prayed with him. But I know he was inviting me to come in there and pray because he reminded me it was time to pray. I really was hurt. It was hurting me to walk away from his door. And as I was walking away, I said, "Sadi," I said, "you know," I said, "I'm in travel." I said, "you know Muslims are permitted to pray and travel." I said, "You can ask the brothers who travel with me. I pray in the car." He said, "Daddy, I remember that. You taught us to do that too." It made me feel very good. And I still feel bad though, because I should have went in that apartment that Sadi and prayed with him. So, you know, individual worth. What is responsible for Sadi coming into this new mind now that's making him deal with his father with more respect and deal with matters with more respect? Sadi is back in school. He's in college now. He's gone back to school. He dropped out of high school. He went back and took the GED. He's in South Suburban College now, and they have selected him. They selected him to represent math in his class and for his school. They asked him to join a special group of students. He refused to join the special group, and I think he made the right decision. Because his life has been under a lot of pressure, and still under a lot of pressure. He didn't want to take on too much pressure. And I think he made the right decision, but at least he was offered to join a special group of students. So we feel very proud of this. And what accounts for that, what explains Sadi being able to do that, is his mother, yes. His mother, she got so sick of being just tormented and worried to death about Sadi. She was almost dying herself. In fact, I was dying a little bit too every week yet. Sadi came close to death twice, close to death. His lungs, he got shot through the lungs once, pierced through the lungs with a metal object. Guy stabbed him in his back, pierced his lungs. That was one time. He was sitting in a car, guy shot in the car and killed his friend sitting next to him, and the bullet glazed his scalp, cut through his scalp of his head, but he lived. Yes, some credit goes to his mother, who said, Sadi came to his mother, said, Mama, I don't know what to do with myself. He asked her, he apologized to her for the word he caused her. So she said, Sadi, I'm going to take you with me when I go to the mosque. We call it the place we go to worship, not church. We call it mosque. We don't call it church. We call it mosque. Place of worship, same. She said, I'm taking you to the mosque with me every Friday. That's the most holiest day for Muslims, is Friday. Every Friday. She said, and you're going to have to beat me up or kill me to keep me from doing it. So Sadi said, oh, Mama, I'll go to the mosque with you. Sadi started going to mosque with his mother. And she didn't just take him to the black people's place of worship. She took him downtown where different nationalities, different race mix, racial mix was there. And also to the place on the south side where we are the people that attend there and responsible for that mosque. So Sadi eventually started going on his own. He eventually started telling his mother, come on, Mama, let's go. Are you going today? You going to pick me up? Because he didn't have a car at the time. Are you going to pick me up? So she would say she would go back and pick him up. She is to be given a lot of credit for what role she had in bringing change about for Sadi. But most of all, it's Sadi's own human self that's to be given the credit. God says to us that no one can have a change for the better, not even a nation. If you're in the United States, get in trouble, and it wants change for the better. God says no individual and no nation can have change for the better unless they first have change for the way they think inside their own bodies, inside their own minds, inside their own souls. We have to have a change inside before we can have a real change outside. And the change inside comes about because we start to respect the individual work. I'm not a tool. I'm not a dog. I'm a human being, and a human being is the most special thing in this whole universe, the human being, except God. God said he made the human being, if the human being will just conform, obey, respect the best that the human being is, God says he made the human being even a bit higher than angels. A bit higher than angels. So really there's nothing created that's more precious, more deserving of respect and honor than the human person that God made. The human person that God made. The world makes us all over. I hope we all will be successful in coming back to the human person in us that God made. No human person is born with a bad nature, a bad soul. Every human being is born innocent and good. And we can get the evidence of this by just going to the hospitals, to the nurseries today, where little babies are just born, and you won't see any tendencies in those babies to be bad. They all are good. They all respond to your kindness. They all respond to your affection. They respond to your goodness. They will love you if you really love them. And God has given them a protection, a psychological defense. You can't fool a baby. You can't fool the infant. You can have bad in your heart, bad intentions for that infant, and you pick it up smiling, you be faking a smile and faking love, and that infant starts to cry. That infant starts crying because God has given it a mechanism that registers that this person is not truthful to me. This person is not true. This is a liar. Wonderful creation, the human person. What a wonderful creation the human person is. And all of us start out good and innocent. Not only that, God says things as he made them and the purposes he made them for, and as he left them for man, was good. Even man, as God left man, was good. God says this, I'm giving you the Bible because most of you are Christian oriented, you're Christian familiar with Christianity. God says in the Christian Bible that he made things on the first day, second day, third day, fourth day, fifth day, sixth day, and the seventh day he rested from his works. So then God says he beheld, that means God, in God's judgment, everything was good. That everything that he made was good. And he actually had made man too on the sixth day. He made man on the sixth day. So that means man too. But then later, the Bible says, God says, it's in the Bible, it's revealed in the Bible through the prophets of the Bible, that the man was made and he beheld that he was not good. The man, this was not good. It was not good. The man sinned, and it was not good. He sinned. He did the thing that God had given him a conscience to stay away from. He did it. He went to it. He did it. So then it was trouble. Where's the explanation for that? Here is the explanation. God made the man, and then Satan, the devil, the thing that comes in us that has no respect for God, the thing that comes in us that has no respect for truth, righteousness, fairness, etc. So that thing came into this person, and he disobeyed God and listened to that thing. His conscience was created to say no to such invitation, to say no to such advice. But he didn't obey his conscience. He disobeyed God. Disobedience, when you disobey your good conscience, is the same as you disobeying God. So he disobeyed his better conscience, and he did the thing that was suggested to him through his rational mind. And this is called Satan acting through your rational mind. This is to tell you to come out of the
decency that you respect and do your indecent thing on a wrong thing. That's called the Satan acting through your own rational mind, the devil. So when this happened, the man sinned. But the man wasn't acting upon what God had given him as an authority. God had given him his better conscience as an authority. And now he comes up and accepts the worst invitation from himself and ignores his better conscience and gets into trouble. So the man is not bad because God made the man bad. The man is bad because he disobeyed his better conscience. God made everything good. Everything was put into existence for the good of families and for the good of publics. When I say publics, I'm talking about city, town, neighborhood, wherever public situation we think ourselves to be living in. I'm talking about public situations. So God made everything and put everything into existence for the good of individuals. I have to include too, families and publics. Everything. God tells us in our holy book, the Quran, similar to what I find in the Bible, Genesis 2, that we should look to the skies and see that space up there and how stars are so numerous up there and the space is so unlimited. We don't know a lot of things. Astronomers, as much as they have studied the skies, scientific studies been made in the skies with telescopes, the help of telescopes, powerful telescopes that can reach millions and millions of light years into the space. Still, they don't know the end of it. Isn't that something? Nobody knows the end of the skies. Nobody knows. If you travel and travel through the skies on a rocket, on a spaceship for thousands of years, what you will find at the end of it. Nobody knows. Nobody knows the end of space. And God says that God has made the human mind to be free, to travel through space. We're sitting right here, right now, we're traveling in the skies, aren't we? I'm talking about the skies, and I'm sure your mind is on the sky. So your mind is not in this room right now, in the center. Martin Luther King Jr. said it. Your mind is in the sky with me. We're traveling in the sky. And your mind can go in the sky and travel and travel and travel, and God says everything you come upon, everything you see, everything you come upon, God made that to be a benefit to you. To be a benefit to you. Didn't make that for the black or for the white or for the red or for the brown. Made it for every human being to be a benefit to you. Now, if you can stretch your mind a little bit and imagine this, it's real. It's not imagination. It's actually absolutely real. The sun is given to you. God made the sun for you. The star, the biggest star in our solar system, in our family of stars that we belong to, I should say planets, because our planets are not true stars, scientifically speaking. The biggest planet in our family of planets is Jupiter, and Jupiter was made for you. Mercury is the smallest and closest to the sun. Mercury was made for you. God made the clouds, the wind, the rain, the everything, the sunshine, the earth, the rivers, the lakes, the ocean, the trees, the minerals, the resources in the earth. Made all of that for you. All of us can't enjoy that physically. I can't physically and pick up these things in my hands and enjoy them. I'm going to take them to my home. I want it. No, it's impossible. It's too big. It's too much. But I can enjoy everything with my rational mind. With my rational mind. Poets become great poets because their minds take wings as a mighty bird and fly out through the open space into the sky, and they see the beauty and the art out there. God has put all those stars together in an art. It's a piece of great art. The big dipper, the little dipper, the many forms and shapes that we find the stars take, and the artist comes back with ideas, with new pictures of beautiful things in his mind, and he puts them on a canvas, and somebody eventually recognizes that this is a wonderful piece of art, and he might become famous for that. But his mind was spared by the things God made for his mind, whether in the earth, near him, and in the skies, distance away. So all of us can enjoy the great field of material things that God made for each and every one of us individually, if we would just let our minds go sometimes, let our minds take wings. None of us, you'll miss a lot of the trip if you try this on reason, or if you try this on crack cocaine. You'll miss a lot of the wonderful things in this voyage into the sky. Let your mind take wings and realize that everything out there, God intended it to be a benefit to you, your soul, your emotional interest, your psychology, your rational mind. You have to see yourself more important than you've been seeing yourself. I had to. I used to see myself just as Wallace. But as I began to appreciate what God said about what I am, I began to appreciate myself as a computer that no scientist can duplicate. A computer that no scientist can match. No scientist can create a computer as valuable as the computer God created when God created me with my emotional makeup, my senses, and my rational mind. Wonderful creation. We should come to know ourselves again. Come to know yourself again. Glory as it is. This is a man of God living in a terrible society, a terrible nation that had a terrible ruler over it. The ruler was called Pharaoh, one of the bad pharaohs of Egypt. And this man was called by God. So the Pharaoh was threatening to punish him, have him put in jail or kill him for differing with the Pharaoh. He differed with the Pharaoh. He had opinions that the Pharaoh would respect, and that the Pharaoh thought would make trouble for the people if the people started believing that this man was believing. So the Pharaoh wanted to know, said, "Where do you get the authority to speak to me like this?" That's what the Pharaoh, the ruler, asked him. "Where do you get the authority to speak to Pharaoh like this?" And this man, called by God a prophet, he told Pharaoh, he said, "I get it from the one who created my form and thereafter gave guidance." Now the scholars in the religion, the great thinkers in the religion, we understand that to mean this, that when we know how God created us, we will have the guidance to know how to live. And God created us with senses, sense of sight, sense of hearing, sense of smell, sense of taste, sense of feel. God created us with senses, and also a sixth one that we seldom think of, intuition, intuitive sense, that can even go where these five senses can't take. In fact, we believe the intuitive sense is a combination of all the senses working together as one instrument, as one instrument. They call it a sixth sense, but we believe it's the five senses working together as one instrument. These senses are free. No one can enslave our senses. Men have been locked up and put in jail for their beliefs. And when they're released, they have improved their beliefs. They have improved their ideas. They come out of jail sometime with volumes when they went in jail with nothing but just an idea. But they come out of jail with volumes. Why? Because you can't imprison the intelligence. You can't imprison the senses of the human being. You can only imprison the body, the physical, the flesh. So if we study our form that God made, if we study it to see how does this work? What is this? What is this human in me? How is it created to work? What does it want? What, and many other questions, a thousand more questions we need to ask. But when we have asked a lot of questions about the human person that I am, we come up with the knowledge of how this human person is to be respected, is to live, is to be free. Freedom is the most precious thing we have. Freedom is what will make us better. Freedom is what will make us more responsible. Freedom is given to us to grow us up. Are you listening? Freedom is given to us to grow us up. A rock can't be free. A tree can't be free. An ape can't be free. A lion can't be free. Not as free as the human being can be. God has created the human to be freer than everything. So freedom is given to us to grow us up. To grow us up. The more free, more you exercise your freedom, the more experience you're going to have. Some of that experience will be bad. But if you respect your good conscience, you will benefit even from your bad experience. So God has given us the possibility to do wrong. He made us free. He also opened to us the possibility to do wrong. God did that. Let me tell you another little story. There's a story of the great wise King Solomon. Two women came claiming the same child, a baby. The baby couldn't speak to tell Solomon which woman was lying. It was an infant. Both of them were claiming that infant. So the matter was brought eventually to the king, and the king asked, whose baby is this? He asked one woman. She said, it's my baby. He asked the other woman, said, whose baby is this? The other woman said, it's my baby. So the king, knowing the nature of the good mother, he said, bring the baby to me. He took the baby and put the baby on the table. Back then they didn't carry pistols, they carried swords. He took out a sword, big long sharp blade, and he raised it. He said, I'm going to give each of you half of it. And when he raised it like this, one woman said, no, give it to her, please. And he told her, come take your baby. He gave the baby to that woman. That's how he discovered. He brought out who was the real mother. Now, how would you understand that as scholars? I'm going to share this with you. Religious preachers, teachers, scholars who study the religion, study what God said. We have to understand this way. God made us with human souls and with a rational mind to be free, to have freedom of choice. He could have made us like he made angels. Angels, they can't do anything but good because God didn't make them to question God. God didn't make them to question what is right. They don't have that nature. Only man has been given that freedom. Only human being has been given that freedom, not angels. God gave us that freedom because He'd rather see us whole. And whole for God means you have a rational mind, freedom to have your own choices, to be your own boss. Freedom to be your own boss. Be your own boss, I mean boss over your own self. God made us free to be bosses over our own selves. And rather than have half of that and make us so that we can't think disobedience, we can't think to act outside of the law, God says, no, I'd rather have them whole as I imagine them to be. I'd rather have them complete as I imagined them, as I created them to be, than to have them really half. Because to take the rational mind from the human person would be mutilating that human person. It would be just like cutting the baby in half. You're dead. You're finished. If I don't use my own free mind and rational mind, I might as well be cut in half, split in half, dead, slaughtered right on the table. How many of you want to respect what God has made you a little more from this day on? Let me see your hands. How many of you that I've been talking to? Will you have a little more respect for what God made out of you? God made you precious, valuable, to be respected, to have great honor, great freedom and responsibility for yourself, to be your own boss. God didn't make any man to boss over you unless that man accepts that something you can turn to is boss over him. And each one of us can turn to God as authority. And God wants us to call anybody else into question if they abuse the right of their trust in the position of authority. God has made anybody an authority over us. God has made people to be trusted in position of authority. So they have the right of trust. They have right to convince me that I can trust them. Convince me that I can trust you to be my boss. Convince me that I can trust you to be my mother. Yes, God has made us to have position of authority as a trust. And when we fail that trust, we are not entitled to that authority anymore. And I want you to know that when God made you boss over yourself, that's also a trust. And if you fail responsibility for that trust, you lose that too.
Last word, friend.
So I tend to like to imagine myself as the only person on earth like Adam was. I do that really to just free my mind to the maximum degree possible for me. And I look at myself, say, well, what's here? What is in existence? I myself. I am here. I. And I look outside and the earth. And I look up and I say, and the sky. Let your mind be free sometimes to think of nothing else being in existence, no other people, no other person, except you, the earth,
and the sky.
You don't have to think on it for a long time. If you just think on it just for a split second, you'll find that your mind will relax, your mind will feel better. And remember what we said, that everything in earth and in sky was made to be a benefit for you. Your pleasure, you want to be a little bit more courageous, your mind, you want to be a little bit more courageous, your senses, to go out and study these things and become a scientist in some area, become a scientist in some field of human interest. So the world can have another chance if more of us would just think this way and realize that everything has been given to man for us to share. Material, wealth, power, authority, everything is to be shared. And we all, as inheritors, inheriting what God created us to have, we have a right to a say-so at least in how these things are shared. So I hope that one of you or many of you in your generation in this town will rise up and become an influence for your whole town, Milwaukee, for the whole town, London, and be an influence for better conditions and more fairness and more respect to the human person, based upon the individual value and worth that God created us for. So we are to have everything in its proper place and to know the purpose for which God intended it or created it, and believe that if we have respect for a thing in its place and in its purpose that God intended for it, we can get that thing to have good, and we can get good too from a relationship with that thing, or from a study of that thing, etc. The world is quietly forming and also influencing a change of mind in all of us. In all of us, this is a big day. There has never been a time on earth as good as this time. And I'm a Muslim. I know our Prophet Muhammad Ibn Abdullah, who was born in Mecca, the city of Mecca in Arabia, and left that town because that town rejected him and treated him bad, so he went to Medina, another town. And he established himself in great following in that next town, Medina. And that happened about 14 centuries, 1400 years ago. Now I know of that time, and believe me, I would love to have been back there to see our Prophet Muhammad, to have known him personally. But if I would be given the offer now, this is fiction, but if someone would say, well, man has invented a time machine, you can go back to the 14 centuries ago and live in the time of Muhammad the Prophet, I would feel very heavy-hearted, sad, and I would say to the Prophet, forgive me, Muhammad the Prophet, but this is the most fascinating time ever. And I have opportunities now that you would love to have if you were on earth. May I be permitted to represent you here in this time and in this new wonderful place where Christians and Muslims and Jews are getting together and discussing how they should respect each other's religion and each other's community and have religious tolerance and have cooperation so the whole world will be a better place for human beings? I said, Prophet Muhammad, nothing like that happened in your time. The governments are calling on religious representatives from religions other than religion. I'm a Muslim. But I've been invited to join the State Department as in a committee advising the President and the State Department. I said, I will tell Muhammad, forgive me. I will see you after this life is gone. I hope to join you in the paradise. I choose to stay in America because this is the best time ever for human beings. Thank you very much, and may God guide us all.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Our original intent was to to have a few questions, and we're going to go ahead and have a few questions, but only just a few because of a situation here in the building. He says, okay? It's okay. All right, we're going to have more than a few questions. Alhamdulillah. Good. Questions. Anyone have any questions? Particularly the youth, for Imam. The youth, let's, that's, okay, that's, and the youth over here? Imam?
Excuse me, oh, go right here.
Yes, sir.
There might be an exception. There might, but I'm looking at the general picture you're giving me now. What I say to the general picture is, tell them you have a right not to listen to me. The mess that we have made of this world, you have a right not to listen to me. But anytime you want to talk to me, let me know, because I'm dying to listen to you. That's what I would say.
Yeah, another question, but come a little closer. We want to get it on so everyone can hear it, please. Okay, go ahead.
Do you believe that the compromise of not only our youth character, but of our character in general in the world is because of the compromises we make? And could you expound to the youth how perversion and such things are really threatening them?
Yes. We were created, I've said this, but I'm saying it now in the same thing in different words. I'm going to say it again. We were created to live by the rule of conscience. The rule of conscience. The conscience God intended for us. So we were created to live by the rule of conscience. And the rule of conscience should be respected. It was Satan, the devil, who is not like angels. Satan is rational. Satan has a rational makeup like us. Satan can make independent choices. Satan is created to make free choices, think on his own, to think on his own. God made him what we call in our Islamic language, a jinn, not human, made him jinn, J-I-N-N. And jinn means that they are able to, the creatures that are able to think like we think, rational, use rational minds, they're independent minds. But they tend to act upon their own opinions. Not like man having a conscience over him, and he will question what he wants to do, or question what his opinion is, in light of what he sees as decency for himself, or as right mind for himself, conscience for himself. So we are told that when God created everything, he told the archangel, the greatest of the angels, Gabriel, he said, I'm going to let you see the world as I'm making it. And when he showed it to the great angel Gabriel, or Gabriel in our language, Gabriel said, what a wonderful world, my Lord. He said, how can any creature go wrong in such a world? And then God says, now I'm going to show you the world after Satan would have influenced it. So he then showed this great angel, Gabriel, the world as it would look now after the great Satan had his influence on it. And the angel, I hope you can keep your door closed, please. The great angel said, my Lord, how can any creature keep from going wrong in such a world? So, yes, the world is a perilous place, a very dangerous place for us, if we want to be right. Even among people that you believe to be right, once you get among them, once you qualify to be accepted by them, you'll find that they are not as right as you thought they were. Sometimes you'll meet a big disappointment. But if you're strong enough to hold on to your position that right is right, and I am to only be right, and I am to even criticize myself when I'm wrong, God will eventually put you in a good situation. And nothing will be able to defeat you. Nothing will be able to make you sad. Nothing will be able to make you miserable. Nothing will be able to take blessings from you, a benefit from you. You will know that your life is in God's control, that God has taken you into his special interest, and you will know that everything's going to be all right. Even if someone put a gun in you, shoot you, you know, the gun will fire, I may be dead, but still I'm going to be all right. Because there's a bigger reality, and you'll be in God's special interest. That's what I'd like to say to you firstly. But now, answering his question more directly, this world is troublesome the way it is, because of the special kind of democracy we have. This democracy challenges the human being in all of his power and value more than any other form of democracy or government that I can imagine. There's no other form of government on earth, not even in Europe, which is similar to ours. But their democracy is a little different from ours. We live in what is called an experimental democracy. The founding fathers who designed this freedom for us, they believed that God most of all wants freedom and growth for human beings. And they believe that if you can give more freedom, there'll be more growth. If you take back any freedom, you limit the growth. So they want us to be as free as possible so that we can have the maximum amount of creativity, production, invention, growth, general growth for us as possible. Now, I like this experimental democracy, but to tell you the truth, in some respects, it makes me feel uncomfortable as a Muslim. Because while I know that at least respect the freedom of their body, I know too that we have an obligation to uphold the rule of conscience, and that means to stand up for what is right. I'll give an example of what bothers me, as it bothers you. The availability of drugs, and the knowledge that many people are just not responsible to stand up to such temptation. And it doesn't mean they're stupid, doesn't mean they're young or stupid or bad people. It doesn't mean that. can find a man who just had a tragedy in his life, and the tragedy has affected him so much that the temptation to take a drug that will bring him relief, help him get that off his mind, will be so great. And he's educated, maybe he has a doctorate degree, but the temptation is so great. Now he takes drugs. Someone says, man, take your drugs, man. It's only going to make you feel good, man. It's going to make you feel good. Here, don't charge you nothing, blood is free. So he takes the drug. As a Muslim, as a man of conscience, not a Muslim, just as a man of conscience, any man, I feel that that person shouldn't be severely condemned. We should look at his circumstances, the situation, what condition was he in, because after all, we excuse crime. We excuse the crime of cold-blooded murder. If the circumstances can justify us excusing that crime. This person was so troubled mentally by what happened until this person just took the gun and shot the person dead. So the judge would say that this person grew temporarily insane when he did that, or when she did that. Temporarily insane. Excuse them for the act, just get them some treatment. Send them somewhere where they need treatment, and if it wants to be treated sufficiently, they're released, they're free again. So the man who suffers, or the person who suffers a lot in their life, and they're driven to do a thing for relief, we have to treat them differently. We can't be so harsh on them. We can't be so weird, so severe with the rule of law. So what bothers me is that we have many people out there in this society like that, whose personal life is so much, so troubling for them, that they just want any relief. They're almost about to commit suicide. So they want any relief. Now we are allowing these drugs to be available to them. It's just like saying to a person who's so messed up inside that if you gave them a loaded gun, they might shoot you or shoot themselves. Yeah, make the gun. This is a free society. The gun has to be available. There's a saying, I can't recall who said this, that our form of democracy requires of each of us that we exercise a sense of self-control. That's a saying, not mine, it's a saying. I can't recall the author of that saying. Our democracy requires of each of us that we exercise a sense of self-control. But again, I say, as a Muslim, I'm uncomfortable. Knowing that people can be driven by trouble in their lives to do things they can't exercise a sense of self-control, the situation for them doesn't permit them to exercise a sense of self-control. So we have to then be our brother's keeper. So I disagree with carrying this freedom too far and permitting people to sell drugs to the general public, make it available to minors, to people who are suffering, great traumas, etc. I don't agree with that. So I think our democracy yet needs refining. We yet need to make modifications, make some changes on it, so it can be the democracy that is decent enough for the wonderful person that God has created inside of this body, for all of us, each of us. Did that answer your question? Christian religion and my religion says that God disapproves of certain things, and when violations are repeated, there's a point when God's wrath
his punishment comes on us. And God says his punishment falls upon whomsoever he has willed that it falls upon. But his mercy extends beyond his punishment. His punishment is limited. His mercy is not limited. We should forgive as long as we see any reason to forgive. And no matter how much wrong is repeated, as long as we see a reason in the person that justifies us forgiving them again, we should be willing to be as God in that attribute of forgiveness. We should be willing to forgive eternally, as long as we see the person trying, making another effort to do right or to do good. We should never write them off.
For more on the ministry of Imam W. Dean Muhammad, Muslim American spokesman, call or write WDM Publications, call 1-708-862-7733, or write Post Office Box 1944, Calumet City, Illinois, 60409. For Muslim Journal, see local distributor. And thanks for listening.